can't see Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You got, Corey Majors.
Oh, man.
And, of course, the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, let's talk some baseball. Now, Chris Young, you brought this up Thursday or Friday, and I wanted to, like, dive further into it. Chris Young said, I think from a position player standpoint, we feel pretty good. Which is interesting because the Rangers were bottom five offense league-wide by most statistical categories last year. And they're bringing back pretty much the same group.
Yep.
Because who they added? Brandon Nimmo, Danny Jansen. And Danny Jansen's like a split-time catcher. But
as of right now, RotoChamp has him as the projected starter.
Okay. I just wonder if you'll see like pretty much the same as last year, where they're like, let's mostly try to split it unless one surges ahead.
Yeah. I liked Higgy in there. Yeah, man, this is they have not done much. It seems like Chris Young has told us adamantly for the last 2 years, we just need them to play better.
Right.
And it sounds like, doesn't that feel like that was pushed down from the top, from not hit from his boss? Look, you're not getting any money, so you need to figure out a way for these guys to play better.
Yeah.
And that feels like that's what that push was. So this group, you're going to rely very heavily on your top three hitters. I think that's where you put a lot of your hope and desire in, is that those three can provide the runs that you want, and that's Nimmo, Langford, and Seager. Those are going to be your top three, your first three guys up, probably.
So I wanted to go through what your position groups kind of like essentially look like right now.
All right.
So at catcher, Higashioka and Jansen.
Mm-hmm.
First base.
Jansen hit .215 last year, by the way.
Hell yeah. Jake Berger, that's worth a multi-year deal. He's your first baseman. Second baseman, I don't know if this is in order, but Josh Smith, Cody Freeman, Ezekiel Duran. Maybe your order's different, but I feel like those are three of your true contenders.
I'm very interested because didn't it feel like Bochy with Duran, like he was there and then kind of continued to just slide away? And I wonder if with new manager, everybody's a clean slate, or if they're all like, no, this is kind of where we stack everybody already.
And I feel like Bochy was pretty upfront about
the
mental and physical struggles of Duran, but that's fair. Shortstop, Corey Seager, and I'm not even getting into injuries at this time. Third base, Josh Young. And then I have two potential different outfield lineups. Wyatt in left, Evan Carter in center, and Nimmo in right. If you don't think that Evan Carter is going to be a go, then the thought would be that Langford is in center, and then Nimmo and Osuna, I would guess, would get the first shot in the corners, and then Jock Peterson at DH. Now, we can dive more specifically into any of this that you want, but when you hear that, that sounds pretty damn underwhelming, does it not?
It does. Now, if I think about what the best versions of them can do, pretty good. I don't think...
Sure.
Honestly, though, I still don't see a championship roster in that, no matter what. Additions need to be made. That being said, I feel like pitching puts you in a really good, strong position, depending on how that all shakes up. You have two really good pitchers. And then you kind of have, you got another year of Leiter, which you're hoping to make another advancement there. He had moments where he was great, moments where he wasn't. Rocker, he looked good, and then he had moments where you're like, oh, that's a rookie pitcher right there.
Right.
And then maybe Jacob Latt. So, like, the pitching you feel gives you every run through the rotation, you feel pretty good. But Kevin, the roster does not look like a championship built roster. It looks like it's still going to rely heavily on long ball, and it's going to rely heavily on whether or not these dudes strike out a ton. That's kind of where, and there's a lot of names: Jock Peterson being included, Jake Berger being included, hell, Josh Young being included in that conversation too.
So I want to use this text as an example. because I totally get where they're coming from. But count the ifs. I feel good if Berger and if Peterson can pick it up, if Carter's back can stay healthy, if Young can stay healthy and consistent, if Corey Seager can stay healthy, if Nimmo doesn't decline, and if Wyatt can take another step. So just think about that. That's seven ifs. That's almost an if on your entire lineup. And I'm here for that, and I would be willing to wager that some of those things absolutely happen. Like, I'm with you on that. But to make this offense, as it looks right now, truly coherent, don't you need most of those things to happen? Like, I definitely think you need Berger and Peterson to pick it up, and I definitely think you need...
What do you need to pick up from Berger?
Berger is consistency, right? Because Jock Peterson, it was just all around garbage last year. But for Berger, it's any level of consistency, especially with his power.
Yeah, he had 28 home runs. That tied Seager. Like, that was nice. He did hit, what, 243? You kind of expect... Actually, honestly, didn't expect his batting average to be that high.
Yeah, his batting average is not going to be great.
And yeah, I'm with you on consistency.
How many home runs did you say?
I have 28 listed here. Am I wrong about this?
I'm showing 16.
Oh, man. So, this number's way off.
Okay, yeah. But I was like, there's no way he hit that many home runs last year. That does not sound right at all.
Yeah, I got 16 on another one, too.
Okay.
I don't know. This site's stupid. I'm out of here. He hit 29 the year before in Miami.
Okay, yes. And that's the thing. And that was one of the reasons.
Are these projected numbers? Yeah, that's projected.
Well,
numbers.
Great. Then I approve of that, because that's one of the reasons you move for him, is doesn't have a lot of the most position flex. He's not the fastest person in the world, but he can hit for power. And last year, 16 for 53. And like, that's my concern. So that could improve. That could improve with him and Jock. But then it still feels like you need a healthy enough Corey Seager and a healthy and consistent Josh Young. And that's where you're like, man, we have started to pile up a lot of ifs.
So for me, this really does hinge on Josh Young's season for me.
I got that.
It's cool that we got him for $2.9 million in avoided arbitration. All right, cool. We did that. But like, this dude's career, Kevin, we have him on for the next 3 years or two more years after this with arbitration. He'll be like 31 almost by the time he's an unrestricted free agent. This dude's career has been just a up and down roller coaster, and I don't know which version of him is the real one, and honestly, because we always were told he's a hard worker, maybe not the most talented,
right?
But he'll work hard, and that's good. But the talent's got to come out at some point. And what we saw last year, for what we needed out of him, what we expected, was atrocious.
Yeah, and I always wonder how a player does.
And he played most games of his career.
Well, and I always wonder what goes through a player's mind when they realize, like, you're probably not ever going to make a lot of money off of baseball. And like Josh Young, I'm sure the way he started, he was like, oh man, we might be talking in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And just hasn't really worked out thus far. But still, time to turn it around. Can I suggest one more name for you? Now, the number one drawback about this name is he would cost money. And that does not seem to be something that the Rangers are looking to dabble in, though I have been doing my own salary cap breakdowns, and they should have at least another $10 million to play around with. I've seen other numbers that think that number is higher, but I'm going to say I think they have at least $10 million that they should be willing to spend. Now, should is doing a lot of work right there. Does the name, and this is a name that you've brought up in the past, Luis Arraez, do anything for you? The reason why I bring him up, he is a free agent right now, and in this modern world of baseball, he has not drawn a whole lot of interest, despite the fact that his batting average consistently is among the best in the league. What does he not have? He does not have pop, and thus his OPS and his WAR do not always reflect super positively in the modern world of baseball. He played mostly first base for the Padres last year, and he has a lot of experience at second base. Since we were talking about questions about how second base is going to work, does the name Luis Arraez do anything for you? And I don't think he would be particularly expensive, but again, he cost some money.
Yeah, he's what, $14 million with San Diego?
And I would be willing to bet you'd see a pretty good drop from that.
I
really somewhat of a drop.
I love having base runners. I absolutely love having base runners on. This league does not anymore, and they don't desire that. But Skip said, whenever we talked to him, there's more ways to win a game than one.
Sure.
And each day, that's the fun part of it, is trying to figure out what's today. How are we going to be able to do this one today? And I think he adds that component to you. Now, if you get into a game where you need a slugger and he's at the plate, you're pinch hitting. Or you're going, well, I mean, he's probably going to be on base.
Right.
But you're not relying on him in big moments. So exactly where do you put him in the lineup? It does intrigue me.
Okay.
It does intrigue me. But again, Kevin, I'll say that doesn't make me feel like that's changed to a championship roster.
Yeah, and it's going to be kind of the same on the pitching front. I know we feel significantly better about the starting pitchers, especially with DeGrom coming in, ready to roll, and Eovaldi coming in at least to spring training, ready to roll. I feel really good about the progression of Jack Leiter. I know people are hoping that Cody Bradford comes back, or if you want to bring up Kamar Rocker, Lats is getting stretched out to get a shot to start. But ESPN also listed Chris Bassitt, Lucas Giolito, and Nick Martinez as three right-handed pitchers that were quote-unquote inning-eating starters, which is kind of how we described Patrick Corbin when they made that move last year.
What a great innings-eating starter you had, though.
Yes, absolutely.
If you could have just scored more runs, dude, that rotation was awesome.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's scary about all of this. That rotation was awesome. Arguably the greatest overall pitching performance in the history of the Texas Rangers franchise, and you finished 500.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not look like, at least on the surface...
Which basically proves pitching doesn't matter in baseball, Mike.
I would argue that that's how you got to 81 wins, and that pitching very much does matter. But on the surface, it looks like you did not get discernibly better offensively. Now,
yeah,
if some of those ifs start to click, or if Brandon Nimmo really takes off with a new team, or if you see the next evolution of Wyatt Langford, or if Corey Seager stays healthy and gets back to MVP form, or if Josh Young, but think about it. I'm just substituting if for or, and I just said or. That's a lot of uncertainty, and I just wanted to throw it out there to kind of get the vibe of how people are feeling, and this is the part that disturbs me. Somebody texted it in and said, this person is an Astros fan, and they like the strategy that the Rangers are taking.
Shut up.
That is meant to be an insult.
That hurt.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and from the 817. To sum it up, I'm not really that confident. And I think that is a fair way of viewing this. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, NFL playoff overreaction or reality, plus wanker of the weekend. Unless there's just so much overreaction or reality, we don't even get to it. Next on The Fan.
Johnson in motion, fourth down. Herbert hit to end it. Milton Williams.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. And right now, it's time for some NFL playoff overreaction or reality. I'm going to start with this. Jim Harbaugh was asked about whether Greg Roman is the right play caller for the Chargers. And he said, I don't have that answer right now. Overreaction or reality? Both the Chargers and the Eagles need to change their play caller / OCs.
I think if they had scored more than 3 points, he would have an answer.
Right.
The fact that you scored 3 points and you're like, now I have to go back and look at what did we do wrong?
Yeah.
Was it just the offensive line, or was there something else we could have done? And when you know you have a bad offensive line, don't you change the game plan just a little bit?
Sure.
So, but what I have seen, Kevin, is even from what I watched, there are tons of people out there saying this was just a horror film whenever you watched what the offensive line for the Chargers was. So, not to answer your question at all yet, but I understand why Harbaugh doesn't have the answer for it right now, because 3 points is embarrassing on the playoff level.
Alec, what say you?
It's a reality, and the Greg Roman thing is interesting because he was not good with the Ravens. That's why he became available.
Right.
And so magically he goes from one good quarterback to another, and he's supposed to be a good play caller again. It never made sense to me. And Chris Collinsworth was even calling him out on the broadcast, saying they got to have a better check down option. If you're not going to protect the quarterback, give him an outlet pass somewhere to get the ball away.
Yeah.
He had none almost all night. He was having to throw the ball 15 yards to the closest receiver a lot of the times when he was under duress. And then for the Eagles, it's been bad all year. They haven't used Saquon in the right way. Jalen Hurts doesn't want to do this, doesn't want to do that. And he looked disgusted at the fourth in their season play call. They took the timeout to go over the play call. And if you looked at his face, he was like, huh? And he looks at Sirianni, and Sirianni just nods his head and goes, yeah. And they ran a bad play. So, yeah, both their offensive coordinators stink.
Now, this one, I'm going to ask you for a preview. Are you rooting for this better, yes or no? That's all you get to know to start.
No.
Alex? Yes.
Okay. There is a
money-wise
person. Oh, well, you're not going to approve of this at all then. There is a person that months ago at BetMGM in Illinois wagered $50,000 on the Chicago Bears to win the Super Bowl at 66-1. That means that bet is still alive for $3.3 million and is the largest reported Super Bowl future bet by total liability at any legal sportsbook in the United States. BetMGM moved the Bears' betting odds for the Super Bowl down because of this bet. Overreaction or reality, with three wins to go for $3.3 million, you are rooting for this Chicago Bears gambler.
All right. No, I've already said no.
But now with the information, I'm going to give you an option.
Now with the new information, I have the right to change my mind.
Correct. Never let anybody tell you differently in sports or life.
The information I need is I need to know how much, like, does this person have money?
Wouldn't you guess if you're able to drop $50,000 in a futures bet? Probably.
Good, taking a loan out.
That feels, man, what did he really tell that loan officer?
He had a business plan and everything.
He's like, all right, here's my business idea. The Bears are going to win the Super Bowl.
Denied. I actually am kind of rooting for this because it was a preseason thing. It was before season, correct?
No, it was. It actually took place 2 months ago in November.
Oh, screw that person. Never mind.
What the hell?
Yeah. Nah, this is kind of crazy, dude. That's a lot of money, and this kind of does go back to, hey, if you have that much money, can we figure now? If you're, let's say they come back and say, if I win this $3 million, donating half of it to my possibilities, donating the other half to Sandlot, and then the other half to NAMI. Then I would say that would be amazing. And yes, let's root for that person. I have no clue what they're going to do with this.
I think that's
what if they use it to fund an illegal drug ring.
Oh,
you know, or
assuming they do something neutral with the money that only impacts them and their loved ones.
Fine. I'm kind of rooting for them.
All right, Alec, overreaction or reality? You are still rooting for this better with all of the.
And I'm kind of rooting for the Bears, too. So that's another factor that goes into this.
I'd say it's a reality for me because I don't care if it was 2 months ago. Think about how weird the playoff picture was 2 months ago.
Yes.
Like, we thought coming out of the bye, the Cowboys were going to do something. We thought the Packers were still really, really good. You know, we had no idea if the Seattle Seahawks were legit or not, or if Sam Darnold was going to turn into the pumpkin again. Like, I think, if anything, that was even more bold than preseason. So, yeah.
Okay.
I say reality. I want it to happen now.
NFL overreaction or reality? I thought this was going to be a bold statement, but not anymore. The Packers should move on from Matt LaFleur. Now, ignore these so-called reports that they're going to reach an extension with him because they don't want a lame duck coach. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that. Consider this. Matt LaFleur is the fifth head coach to lose multiple playoff games he led by 7 or more points in the fourth quarter. Ouch. Also, he hasn't had a seed better than number 7 since 2021. And since the 2021 regular season ended, he is 1-4 in the playoffs and 30-25-1 overall. Overreaction or reality? The Packers should move on from Matt LaFleur.
I would say that's an overreaction. You have to, I think you know, not everybody comes into this world with everything just great. You have to have those experiences to kind of get you to that next place. You got to learn how to lose. You'd love to win initially.
But he had better experiences and then got worse.
Yeah. I like their team too. They have a lot of talent on that team right now. I wonder what happens in that second half so badly to them. Offensively, it looks like he doesn't change his plan when he has the lead. He's like, no, we're just going to keep doing whatever we were doing in the first half, as opposed to, all right, let's do things that can help us close the game. And the Packers have struggled to close games for sure. I wouldn't move on from him yet, though. I think he's a quality coach.
By the way, people ask what the payout is on that Bears ticket. I have not seen a report about that, but Corey, you'd respect him if he let it ride, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because again, this does fall down to you want the guy probably wanted the Bears to win.
Yeah.
So you guys, you and Choppy, bet against your teams so that even if they lose, you win.
Exactly.
But isn't it better if they do win and you also win?
Absolutely. I can't take that risk. Then I'll,
but
then
this guy.
Then I would have been sad and out money after A&M lost to Miami.
This guy, however, like there's a possibility he's rooting for the team to win,
sure.
And he wants that money.
That is possible.
So I'm pulling for that.
Alec, overreaction or reality, the Packers should move on from Matt LaFleur.
Reality.
There you go.
The precedent was already set by the Ravens this offseason. If you can't get it done in the playoffs, you need to get on out the door. And for Matt LaFleur, I'm right there with Corey. I feel like he kind of forgets how to coach in a way in the second half. It's like his team is good, and he gets out in front. He's a front runner at this point, because his team is talented enough, his team is good enough, even with a bunch of wide receivers that you've never heard of, they're scheming up scoring plays, and it works to perfection until the game actually matters. And I think that there's too much money invested in that team at certain places to the point where I know what his ceiling is coaching that roster. I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he needs a new set of circumstances.
I'd agree with that.
That's why I think if he goes to Miami, things are different, which the GM there is real tight with him. If he goes to Atlanta, things are wildly different. I think Atlanta turns around really quick if he goes there. I think he's a good coach. He just needs a change of scenery.
Wow, y'all want the Packers to be better, huh? All right. Whoa. I see how y'all are.
Interesting. NFL overreaction, man. NFL overreaction or reality. Tonight, the Texans will either beat or beat up Aaron Rodgers into retirement.
Oh, man. I've thought about this a lot with Aaron Rodgers and how he'll be like, I still got one more.
Ugh.
No matter what.
Gross.
And he just like, he convinces some team that he's, I got this. I can do it. I think they're going to beat him up so much that he's going to be like, that was enough. And beat. I think they'll defeat them also.
Okay.
Even though the weather, we're really hinging a lot of things on the weather up there.
No, you think you could look at that defense and be like, they could kick even more ass in the cold.
Yes. Yeah. No, they. That is a fun defense to watch. If you're looking forward to watching like a defensive masterclass, tonight will be the fun. DeMeco Ryans is very good at it. Now, I'm kind of curious how Aaron Rodgers has done against Robert Saleh type, those types of defenses in the past. But this one right here, I'm really looking forward to seeing. I've started rooting for Will Anderson because of our boy Reggie.
Yeah.
Reggie like told me some inside stuff behind the scenes on him that I'm just like, that dude right there, I'm pulling for.
Now, Alec, the same question for you, a bonus question.
Oh, no.
You would take the under on tonight's game, which is 38.5.
Got a double reality here.
Ooh.
Because I think this is going to top the Chargers game last night.
I was
going to
ask you that.
It's going to be the ugliest playoff game we see. It's going to be like a 10-6 final. It's going to be gross, but it's going to be gross because that defense is going to be amazing for the Texans. D'Amico Ryans is starting to get all the pieces that he needs, and people still aren't talking about them enough. Like Corey said, masterclass. If you, and I know in today's NFL, people don't really care, but if you really do enjoy watching well-schemed pressure and great coverage on the back end and just technically sound football, you're going to get that watching the Texans' defense. I don't know about their offense. I really don't. But their defense is just amazing. It's going to be so fun to watch.
Now, Corey, it goes back to you for the bonus overreaction reality. You would take the under on 38.5 tonight.
I would take the under on 38.5 tonight. But I would take the under if it was like 35, too.
What if it was 30?
Probably not.
Okay.
Because there is possibility that Stroud just lights them up, you know, figures that out a little bit, but I definitely feel like it's under at 35.
NFL overreaction or reality. I'm going to need to present you with some information here. Tony Romo might not need to be an NFL broadcaster anymore. All right. Now there's a few things at play here. Feels like his popularity has really fallen off pretty rapidly in the last couple of years, and some have called him a caricature of his former self who only speaks in cliches. There was the replay going into, I believe it was a break, where Tony Romo said, "Don't worry, guys, he caught it." And then it was, of course, ruled incomplete. Or we can go to cut number 11 for this real, actual audio.
It's strange. And that's first down. How strange. How did you know?
So, do you just hate Tony Romo?
No, not at all. I've told you many times, I am largely indifferent.
I heard him guess like two or three times on plays.
Yeah.
And one time he even questioned himself before he said it. He goes, "Play action here." And then it wasn't. And he was like, "Well, all right, here's your." And that was
whereas what Brady says, "Ooh," and you know something's about to happen because he's like, "No, I already saw how the play is going to go."
And then Tom Brady after the play goes, "Wow." And that's all you get for analysis.
No, I'm indifferent, but a lot of people were dumping on him for this weekend.
Dude, it also happened, like, when he said the overdog, he was like, "They're an underdog, but they're also the overdog." And everybody was like, "The hell just happened?" I'm happy for him to have that job.
Okay.
You know, I think that's great for him to have that job. Look, man, whenever you have these jobs where you talk a lot, people hate.
That's true.
And hate.
If you were running the network, would he be on your A-team?
I would be calling Greg Olson.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And stealing him from Fox. Yeah. Because Greg Olson's like, "I guess I got to go coach now because Brady took my job." I think Greg Olson's great. I really do enjoy him a lot. Tony Romo, he hung everything on, "I can guess the plays." And right now it doesn't look like he understands it all completely.
Alec, overreaction to reality. Tony Romo might not need to be an NFL broadcaster anymore.
It's a reality. He's the one-trick pony, right? The guessing the plays thing was cool for a couple seasons, and then it's almost like he acknowledges that we know that's his bit, and he doesn't really care anymore. And it feels like some games he kind of walks in with no prep. It's just like that whole spiel that Corey was talking about, the underdog, but the overdog thing. He said a whole lot of sweet nothings in about 35 seconds where he was like, "You know, the team is really good, but they were really bad at one point, so they might still be bad, but I think they're pretty good. They could be good. I don't know."
And there was also that part in that, as you were doing that, he did, "A lot of people don't know, and I know a lot about football."
Yeah, he's like "I'm a knower of football," or something like that. Like, it's like, okay, dude, I get it. And it's completely pivoted. I actually enjoy listening to Tom Brady on the broadcast now. I think he actually provides real insight and X's and O's analysis. Like, Romo is just, especially what gets me, is on the replay reviews where he's just, "I don't know, Jim, Dean, what do you think? I don't know," because he doesn't want to be wrong in that moment. Give me an opinion.
Now, NFL overreaction or reality? I know what your answer used to be, Corey. Wild card weekend has become your favorite round of the NFL playoffs.
Well, I mean, because of the way this whole weekend from Thursday to Sunday and tonight mapped out,
right?
Like, I got everything I wanted except for Tuesday night football, which I'm still like, when are we getting this back?
We'll work on that.
And we got some good games. Like, there were that last night was a dud.
Yeah.
You know what? At 1 o'clock, I'll explain what I had to go through in order to get that dud. And I hate it. But because I should have just called you and said, what's your password? But I didn't.
Oh.
Yeah.
Somebody else used it.
But the whole weekend itself was an absolute blast because I had football on all day. And it wasn't red zone style. It was, I can pay attention to this game, know the entire arc of this game and where it goes. Did I get a little lost hanging out with my friends and thinking that Packers-Bears game was over? And then I got the shock, what they call Harley shock, when you walk back in, you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect this to happen. It's called Harley shock whenever you think there's a parking spot, and then you pull into it, and there's a Harley there instead. Yeah, exactly. We all know. So that did happen. But yes, Kevin, my favorite weekend. I loved it. I loved it.
So for the longest time, my favorite weekend has always been divisional weekend because you got the most number of games of the highest quality. And this is before they expanded out the wild card because you would get like four games on the wild card with, you know, the double bye on either side. But it felt like obviously the divisional rounds were better because all of the teams were in the mix. But now with the expanded wild card, you get six games. The first couple were a dud. This one was really, really strong. So I don't know. I'm kind of going back and forth on this. Alec, overreaction or reality? Wild card weekend has become your favorite round of the NFL playoffs.
I think this weekend alone made it a reality. It usually isn't. Because you kind of know going in. There are a couple games that will surprise you just because they're more competitive, but I feel like you have a better read in years past on, okay, this is a paper tiger. Like they usually the NFC South, right? Not to bash on the Panthers this year because they surprised me, I admit, but usually it's like, okay, NFC South division winner is going to lose, and then you know, the one seeds are just chilling at home watching, ha-ha, I'm going to pick on this team and win by 14 next week. You know, like, you have a good idea. This weekend, I had no clue. I was watching the Bears game at a bar with some friends. We left at halftime.
Wow.
We left because we were like, this is pointless.
18-point game.
We went home, and by the time I got home, got cleaned up and situated, I turned on the game and I watched Caleb Williams throwing a touchdown pass. And I'm like, oh, they're within one score. You know, so that
even
alone,
then, did you think like they're going to win this?
Oh, yeah. I was like, that's a Ben Johnson team right there. They're too fired up right now. And that's a Green Bay team. They don't care right now.
Somebody said last night wasn't a dud of teams don't score over 30. Everyone thinks it's boring. Last night was boring.
Yes.
That was bad offense on the Chargers part. I will give the Patriots credit for dialing up a very good defense.
Yeah.
It looked awfully familiar, by the way. That defense looked very familiar, considering it was a Patriots defense with a coach that played for Bill Belichick. He had a lot of disguised stuff that looked very familiar to what Bill Belichick did. They were good last night. The Chargers were bad. That was bad. That was bad offense on their part.
It was when it was 9-3, and I thought the game was over.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah.
NFL overreaction or reality? Think back to when this trade was made, the Micah deal. Overreaction.
It was before the season this year, Kevin.
That is true. That is true. You thought the Cowboys pick received from the Packers would be worse and maybe a lot worse than number 20.
I think in my mind I had somewhere between 22 and 26.
Okay.
That was kind of where my mind was thinking it would be. And I was like, hopefully 22.
Well, because the overwhelming number of people in the feedback we got, some even said it wasn't a real first-round pick,
yeah.
But most of them said this pick will be in the late 20s and maybe the 30s, and instead it's pick 20, and you came really close to it being pick 19. So I am curious what people have to say about that. Alec, overreaction or reality, you thought the Cowboys pick received from the Packers would be worse, maybe a lot worse than number 20.
It's a reality. I thought it was going to be late 20s easily, if not worse, but I was fooled. Because I was along the line of thinking that the Packers were a pass rusher away. They were that close. I really thought they were. That string of receivers that I bash on because nobody knows their names, they're good. And they work in that offense. That running game will surprise you at times. Some weeks it's really, really good. Everything that was going for them was going for them. And they got the pass rusher that they needed, and they got him for a pretty good deal.
Right.
And then he wasn't available. And that changed everything. So, yes, I thought it was going to be a lot worse. I could have seen them making the NFC Championship game.
Bonus question.
Oh, God.
Oh, this is for Alec, obviously.
Alec, we go to you for the bonus. The Packers' 2027 first-round pick could be even higher than the Cowboys. Now, it doesn't matter for the Cowboys' purposes because the better pick goes to the Jets. But bonus overreaction reality, the Packers could be higher in the draft in 2027 than the Cowboys.
I'm going to go overreaction on that one just because I think we're still further away than the Packers, but I do think you could see a drop-off from Green Bay as they're trying to figure things out, especially if they do move on from the head coach. If they're having to take on whole new schemes and systems, I could see them losing a few extra games. I think they're still going to be a good football team, but they could be a little bit worse.
Do I also get to answer bonus questions?
Of course.
Come back to me whenever I know what Philadelphia's done. Because I do, and here's why. I think the Cowboys can win the division if Philadelphia decides they're going to just shred the thing and start anew. Now, that being said, Howie Roseman can still build a team whenever you think he's going to tear it down. He can build a winner. And so that's concerning. But if the Cowboys were to have the higher seed, I can see them being in a position to have a lesser draft pick. But more likely, I'm with Alec. I think that he's right about that. Cowboys are still so many places away.
Well, since you brought up that team, overreaction or reality, A.J. Brown has played his last game with the Eagles.
Reality.
Man, it feels like it has to be, right?
Yeah.
Betting favorite, by the way, Patriots, then the Ravens and the Bills.
They're committed to Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
They'll go down that as far as they can with him, but they can move on from A.J. Brown. Is it a $72 million salary cap hit that he takes this year, though? I feel like it's something ridiculous.
Let's take a look.
But they're committed to building around Jalen Hurts, even if the city Yikes. Thinks that is it pretty big?
Oh, it is $72 million, yeah. And that is part of the genius and then part of the potential trouble of stacking the deals the way they do. Because if A.J. Brown was going to be there even two more years, you know what the out is? $15 million. But for now, man, you are rude.
But it did feel like in the post-game interviews.
Ooh, this might have changed my opinion.
Every single post-game interview from Sirianni, he was probably the best at it. But it's felt like a lot of the players that were question marks with A.J. Brown were all saying we in that locker room while pointing the finger at the one guy. It did feel like they were saying we, and that includes everybody. It felt like they were doing that too. Now, they could be thinking, no, that's not what we were doing. We were saying we, everybody involved. It felt like they were pointing at A.J. Brown.
Alec, overreaction or reality, A.J. Brown has played his final game with the Eagles. I think Corey might have actually changed my mind because of how staggering that dead cap is.
I'm going to say reality because I think even with the cap hit being massive, Howie's going to find a way. Howie's going to Howie at the end of the day, and he's going to parlay whatever, I don't know, third-round pick he gets in return into an all-pro receiver in the next draft. He's going to make it work like that because he does. But like Corey was saying, it feels like the locker room's just kind of out on him. It feels a lot like Jerry and Micah with the players and AJ, where it's like, we need to do this and we need people like this and people need to step up when that people is just one person and his name is AJ Brown. They just don't want to say it out loud. And I'm sure as we get into the offseason, the noise out of Philly is going to get louder and louder and the talking heads out there are going to have their inside scoops. Like we're already getting the conversations about Jalen Hurts doesn't want to run these packages in the offense because he just doesn't want want to.
I think it's going to start with offensive coordinator before they make any other moves.
Yeah, but I do think that the noise is just going to get louder and louder, and it's going to get to the point where Howie's like, I could just not deal with this. It's pretty simple. Get rid of him.
Yeah, yeah, I think you guys...
Or keep him.
I mean...
Make him a tight end.
Obviously, I would support that as well. Okay, couple things on the college football front, and then I might try to quick hit baseball nuggets as we had a lot of fun right there. It looks like LSU is going to add Sam Leavitt, the transfer quarterback out of Arizona State. It looks like that is the way that's going to go down per Pete Thamel. And then... Dylan Raiola is joining Oregon. One of the reasons that is so interesting.
Is he good?
Don't know.
Okay.
I would love.
He wears the headband and, you know, he's like, it's not my fault. I look like Patrick Mahomes. But
yeah.
Is he good?
I mean, he has flashes. I think he definitely improved a good bit from freshman year to sophomore year, but I'm not prepared enough to be like, you watch out, Oregon's got the next big thing. But what's really interesting about that along the way is Oregon is still waiting on Dante Moore's decision, and you would think that perhaps Dante Moore has already informed them that he is moving on into the NFL draft, thus facilitating this move right here. But I don't know that for a fact. All right, right now, let's go ahead and do a truncated version of Baseball Nuggets. And we start with this. Alex Bregman, different scenario here. He signed a 5-year, $175 million deal with the Cubs. What is noteworthy about that, outside the signing itself, $70 million of that money is deferred. And so you're seeing this become more and more part of the game, which led to this amazing factoid that when I read it, I thought it couldn't possibly be true, but then I saw it on two reputable sources, looked it up, and it is shocking. Do you know next year the Dodgers will pay the same amount of money for Shohei Ohtani that the Red Sox will pay for Manny Ramirez?
I'm sorry, what?
Shohei Ohtani deferred almost all of his contract. So next year, he will be paid $2 million by the Dodgers. Manny Ramirez, meanwhile, signed a deal before the 2001 season that included deferred money, and this is the final year of that deal. So this year, the Red Sox will pay the same amount of money for Manny Ramirez that the Dodgers will pay for Shohei Ohtani.
And that money, that deferred money, doesn't go on there.
It goes on this year's payroll, but only in a percentage proportion. I don't remember
But it does. It goes on the luxury tax too.
Like, yes, but way lower than it would be.
Interesting though, the fact that it exists on there, because like there might be a time where the Dodgers are looking at Ohtani's money and they're like, dang.
Perhaps.
We sure would love to spend this extra $400,000. I don't know what it would be, but we have this luxury tax situation. Unless it goes away, you know, new CBA conversations,
I mean,
and all that stuff.
It feels like almost what that entire argument's going to be about in the next year.
This is very interesting. I didn't realize that he had one of those contracts.
And then we told you earlier that Chris Young said they would be opportunistic on all fronts to improve their pitching depth. They claimed Zach Kent off of waivers from the St. Louis Cardinals. Kent was drafted by the Rangers and once one of the organization's top prospects before he was dealt to the Cleveland Guardians a couple of years ago. So he comes back into the fold. We will see if this continues to be the case. But the thought is with the Yankees and Cody Bellinger is they were at an impasse. And so perhaps look for another team to swoop in and pick up Cody Bellinger. So we've started to get
Rangers?
No.
Right.
Look, man, if I had to convince you that the Rangers could maybe kind of sort of try to sign Luis Arraez and Nick Martinez, there's no way in hell they have the money for Cody Bellinger.
All right, fine.
And by the way, the Texas Rangers will play 3 games next year on NBC and Peacock as part of their Sunday Night Baseball package. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, time for the C-Block starring Corey Majors.
Well, I'm glad Kevin told me about the Rangers and Peacock because I got it now. Stinks. Next in The Fan.